Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
As a companion piece to Cold Blooded, these are just some additional episodes to give you a greater insight into the crimes and lives of Private Carl Holton, alias Ricky Allen, and Elizabeth Baker, alias Georgina Grayson. The regular episodes of Murder Mile return at the end of January, with possibly a little surprise in between. Until then, thank you, Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year. Okie dokie, folks. So let's do Elizabeth's second statement. This is she came in the same day. So it's 11th of October again. It's the same day. It's immediately afterwards. She's already spoken to Harry Kimber. Harry Kimber said, you've got to go into the police station and tell them everything. So this is a couple of hours later. So this is her coming in and doing more of a confession. Now, I've broken this down into two parts because it's an 8-page statement. It's going to knacker you out. It's going to knacker me out. I think it's about half an hour each, so you can take your time with this one. But here we go. Okay. Recorded at Hammersmith Police Station, F Division, 11th of October, 1944. Statement of Elizabeth Marina Jones, age 18. Right. The statement I have made to you this morning is incorrect for the most part, and I wish to tell you the whole truth about my association with Ricky Allen. I first met him on Tuesday the 3rd of October 1944 in a cafe in Hammersmith Broadway, and I was introduced to him by Lenny, that's Len Bexley. I don't know his last name. I'll interject every so often, just to clarify details when we need to. He asked me to meet him at 11:30 p.m. that night and to go for a drive. The meeting place was outside of the Broadway cinema. I turned up and he was not there. I was on my way home up King Street, Hammersmith, when I was hailed by a man arriving in an American lorry. I recognised the voice as being that of Ricky, and I got into the truck with him. It was a big truck. It had 10 wheels. It was actually 6. And we drove to Reading. As you'll see with Ricky's statement, this is pretty much about accurate. This is true. Ricky was... So there's a boat going past. Normally I would edit this out, but in these extra pieces, it's fine. I'm all right with that. You won't hear me getting angry about shit. Maybe I will. Who knows? Ricky confirmed that this was the way it happened as well. I think it's unlikely that they got together and made an agreement on kind of a lie here, because it seems an irrelevant piece to kind of lie about. So this, I think this is as near to the truth as we'll get. She continues. I told him in the truck that I would like to do something dangerous, meaning to go over Germany in a bomber. I meant this, but he got me wrong. He then told me that he then told me what he was doing and showed me a gun which he pulled out from the inside of his pocket, or it might have been hooked to his trousers. He went on to say that he had killed a number of people in Chicago with a gun. He told me that he had done a lot of it over here. I then asked him why he was not with his unit. He was dressed in an officer's uniform and he replied, my unit is in Holland. They weren't, they were in Reading. When he got to Reading, some of his unit were actually at the D-Day landings, because that had taken place. Some had gone to Holland. So she's slightly right. When we got to Reading, he drove around the town and we started backwards towards London at about 2 o'clock. That would be in the morning. When we got on the road back, as far as I can say, near Maidenhead, but I know it was on the London to Bath road, we passed a girl on a bicycle going in the same direction. We drove on for about 5 minutes and pulled up at the side of the road. He got out and waited for the girl on the bicycle to come along. I sat in the truck and the girl came alongside the truck. I saw him push her off her bicycle when it was still going and she fell onto the road. She screamed, "Don't touch me." And as it was a clear night, I saw him pick up something and the girl ran off. Ricky climbed back into the lorry and I drove off. It was a left-hand drive and during the night he'd taught me to drive. As we were driving along at a fast speed, Ricky drew my attention to the girl who was crouching in the shrubbery at the side of the road. I think in the front of a garden of a house. As we were going along, Ricky looked through the girl's handbag. Let me just go to the next page. Page two. Page two. Where are you, you bugger? All right. There we go. Page two. Bear with. As we were driving along, Ricky climbed over me and took over the wheel. He asked me to look through the bag. I saw inside was a book and half of a clothing coupon, about 9 shillings in money and letters and photographs. It was a big bag with a small handbag inside. I also saw in it was sanitary towels, a face towel, soap and a flannel. I'm not sure, but I believe there were some pyjamas in it too. Ricky took out the money and the clothing coupons and threw the handbag and the big bag away into the road as we were driving along. We got back into London at about 5 o'clock in the morning and I left him and went indoors. He drove me in the truck to the door and I don't know where he went. He knew my name was Georgina Grayson, my stage name, and I gave him my address before we went. He called for me at my flat about 5 in the afternoon last Thursday, and we went and ate afterwards and went to the Gaumont Cinema in Hammersmith. We came out of the cinema at about 8:30 and entered a cafe in Hammersmith Broadway. Just as we got to the door, the siren sounded. About 3/4 of an hour after we left the cafe, he said, "We'll go and do another job." I understood he meant to go and steal some money from somebody. He took me around to the Gaumont Cinema car park and I saw the American 10-wheeled truck. We got into the truck, which Ricky drove to Reading. In this, she's entirely missed the fact that they'd had taken the young girls. Don't forget, we still don't know the name of that girl there. Taken those the young girls' possessions and they kind of sold them off to people. She's entirely missed that. The truck is driving to Reading. As we neared Reading, he said, "I'm going to break into the White Hart Hotel and get some money." He pulled up outside of the hotel, which is on the right-hand side of the road. It was never really established exactly where that hotel was. It doesn't exist anymore. But got the feeling that we were being watched and Ricky drove away, returning to London by a different road. We went into the West End and then Marble Arch, where we saw a cab. He said, "I'm going to follow it and take the money of the driver." Now, don't forget in the episode, we're going to do Ricky's statements, Carl's statements as well, but he said it was her decision to get a taxi driver and then rob him. We followed the cab for a while and he stopped. Ricky told me we were in Cricklewood. We saw the cab stop and somebody alighted and the cab waited for a while. We stopped around 400 yards behind the cab. Then the cab turned round and passed us. Ricky then turned round and followed him for about 10 minutes until he got to a lonely spot and Ricky drove up ahead of him, forcing the cab to stop. Ricky pulled out his revolver, jumped down into the roadway, went up to the cabbie and said, "I want your money." I heard the cabbie say, "I've just come out." I heard somebody call out from inside the cab, follow him. Ricky jumped back into the truck and drove away quickly. He told me that an American officer was in the cab. The cab began to follow us, but we lost him. I think that was about 1:30 in the morning. So don't forget, that's the cab with John Strangeway in it and the American officer who was in the back. So that's up in Kilburn, which is right. That's kind of, they started in Cricklewood, but then they drove back in through Kilburn, which is kind of heading south. We drove for some way and then we saw a girl walking along the pavement carrying a case. Ricky stopped her and asked if she wanted a lift. She said, yes, I want to get to Paddington Station to catch a train to Bristol. Ricky told her to jump into the truck and she got in between us. Ricky put her suitcase in the back of the truck. We rode out of London along the river. She said her name was Tableau. It's interesting because obviously her name was Violet. Because she was dark and Ricky stopped the truck and drove to the grass very close to the river. I know there were trees there. So this is a Bellweir lock. So she's missed most of the journey there. She's also missed out the fact that, don't forget, Ricky says that it was her decision to pick up a girl and assault a girl. So we'll never really know the truth on this because both of them are blaming each other. It kind of got to that point where it was like, right, we're going to blame each other. Okay, so she just arrived at Bellweir Lock. He said he had stopped because he had a flat tire. I told the woman that I was his wife. We all got out of the truck and there was a flat tire, the near side back one. Ricky looked for some tools. Couldn't find what he wanted, and then we got back into the truck and drove on a short way. I noticed that Ricky was looking round as he was driving. Suddenly he swung the lorry around in the opposite direction and stopped on the grass. He asked the girl and I to get down. Let me just change page. Number three. Bear with. All right. And he said he had to change the wheel. I know he couldn't change the wheel because the lorry was too heavy to lift. I mean, it's a 2.5-ton truck. It's not something he could have done by himself. He called me round to the back of the lorry and said to me, get the girls back to me. I understood him to mean that he wanted me to fix it so that the girl had her back to him. I realised that he meant to do something to the girl and I said, OK. As you do, you just say, oh, OK, you're going to assault a girl. Oh, OK. I offered her, don't forget in this point, she's already kind of made it clear that to the police that he threatened her and that's why she went along with it. But he also is saying that she's the one goading him along. So again with this, we'll read Ricky's statements as well, but it's kind of like it's hard to really pin down who is telling the truth and who is the one that's leading this, who is one frightened of the other. In my honest opinion, I think it's a bad chemistry. I think he's trying to impress her. I think she's goading him. Whether she thinks he'll go that far or whether she wants him to go that far, whether he even knows that he can go that far, i.e. killing someone. I think it's a lot of miscommunication. I think there's a lot of bad chemistry. I think it's a lot going on between them that, kind of like, you know, like Hindley and Brady. I think there's a lot of badness going there within them. So let's dive on. She said, okay. I offered the girl a cigarette and I gave her a light with my lighter, trying to do what Ricky had told me to do. But I think she must have heard what Ricky had said to me because she would not turn her back to him. I said quietly to Ricky, I think she is wise to it. The person here has written the word wide to it. Ricky asked me in a loud voice to get some tools or other, I forget what, from behind the seat of the truck. So I went to the seat of the truck but couldn't find any. The girl had heard Ricky call me Georgie by name, and while I was at the seat of the truck, I heard her shout out, Georgie, don't let him do it. I saw that he was attacking her, and she yelled again, stop him. They were right behind me, and Ricky asked me to help him. Ricky got her down on the ground, and I held her legs. When I looked down on the grass, I saw what appeared to be a heavy-looking iron bar with a sort of knob in the middle of it. It was a tire iron for undoing the lug nuts on the truck's wheels. Ricky then put his hands around my neck, and I thought he was strangling her. She made a gurgling sound, and I saw blood coming from her mouth, and her head was bleeding. She was struggling, and Ricky tightened his grip around her throat. I still held onto her legs, and Ricky took hold of her throat for about 10 minutes before she became limp. I thought she was dead then. Ricky said, "I'm going to throw her into the river." He picked her up. He picked up her shoulders, I picked up her legs, and we carried her to the edge of the river. But I told Ricky, "Do not throw her in," and we left her there. So she's saying we left her on the side of the bank. Obviously, I don't. If you remember the story, I don't think they either of them knew that at that time of the evening, you're kind of going from high tide to low tides, actually. It was kind of redundant. Ricky then went back, picked up the iron bar, and threw that into the river with a splash. We then made sure there was nothing lying on the ground and drove away. Obviously, she doesn't mention anything about laughing and going through the stuff. Which is why this is why I want to do both statements, because what I try to do with the episode is try and tell you the more factual side of what is most likely to have happened, and also a little bit of perspective in there. But with these statements, this is kind of their own personal version, which is why you should never wholeheartedly believe a statement, because it's not going to be 100% true. Let me just have a swig of water. Normally, I don't do this much talking, but here we go. This is page 3. We'll do one more page, then we'll take a break. I think you deserve one. Oh, right. Before we drove away... Oh, I can't even say the words. Before we drove away, Ricky told me to search her pockets, and I found about 6 shillings in her coat pocket, which I gave to Ricky. I looked in the girl's handbag, which had been left on the seat as we drove along. After only finding papers and photographs, Ricky threw them away out of the truck window. The handbag is in my flat at the moment. It is in the wardrobe. Did she keep it there because she wanted it as a souvenir, or did she keep it there because she wanted it to implicate Ricky? We drove back to my flat, and Ricky took the girl's suitcase and blanket from the truck into my room. Ricky then took the truck away and came back within a short time and told me he had left the truck in Ravenscourt Park, which is not too far away. We went to my room and examined the contents of the suitcase. The suitcase and part of the stuff I see in this room, so that's the interrogation room that she's in with the police, the questioning room, inverted commas, is part of the stuff which belongs to the girl. After examining the suitcase, Ricky and I went to bed. The only thing you haven't got is the handbag and the coat, which is in my room. That would have been a very difficult story. Soon after we got in, Ricky noticed a very large patch on each of his trouser leg and on the leather jacket he was wearing. And he said, "You'll have to go and take my valise tomorrow." Let's go to page four. It's the last one, and then we'll take a break. I'll take a break just before we get to this end of this statement. Okay. We stopped in bed until 10 to 3 on Friday afternoon and got up. He then gave me the railway cloakroom ticket, and he asked me to go to Hammersmith Metropolitan Station to get the valise. The valise meaning his army bag. I did as he asked me to do and brought back the valise. He took out a pair of trousers out of the valise and put the bloodstained trousers back in their place. The bloodstained trousers are in the valise. The American officer took them away when you called this morning. So that was Dr. Robert DeMott, who was the American lawyer on behalf of the US military who turned up. He, i.e. Ricky, went out at 4:30 p.m. and promised to call me at about 6 o'clock. He didn't come, and I stayed in. At about 11:30 p.m. I heard a whistle coming from the street outside, and I went down to the street door because I recognised it was Ricky's whistle. This was an arrangement we had made previously. He had come indoors and then said, "Come on, let's go and get a taxi." I knew the meaning behind his words, that he wanted to go with me to rob a taxi cab driver. Okay, so this is leading up to the murder of George Heath. Now, what I did was with the episode, the George Heath episode, was I kind of told it all from his perspective, Heath's perspective, because I wanted it to be his story. But what that meant is I couldn't tell you how Georgie saw it and how Ricky saw it. I'm using their aliases now, but that's what we're going to see here, is kind of their perspective of it. We walked along Hammersmith Road and stood in a shop doorway opposite Cadby Hall. So that is on Hammersmith Road and the corner of Munsden Street. If you're a Patreon subscriber, I've uploaded photographs of that corner. I also did a little video as well. It's on TikTok. You can have a look at that. After about 10 minutes, a grey Ford car approached us very slowly, like a taxi cab. It was coming from the direction of Hammersmith Broadway. I yelled, "Taxi," and it stopped. Ricky thought it was a naval car. Don't forget, this is a private hire cab, not a black cab. Black cabs are very specific kind of types. If you're a private hire, you can use any type. So Ricky thought it was kind of a military car. Ricky thought it was a naval car, and Ricky stopped in the shop doorway while I went over to speak to the driver. I said, "Are you a taxi?" And he said, "Private hire, where do you want to go?" I replied, "Wait a minute," and went back to Ricky. I told him it was a private hire, and he asked me how many men were in it. I told him only the driver, so we went across to the car, and Ricky asked the driver to take us up to the top of King Street. I know now that the driver was called George Heath, for reasons I will tell you later. He told Ricky that the fare would be about 10 shillings, and Ricky said, "That's all right." I know that Ricky had 19 shillings in his pocket, and that he also had 10 shillings and threepence. We got into the car and drove down King Street. After a while, Heath said, "We passed King Street. Where do you want to go?" Ricky said, "It's farther on. I don't mind paying more." Heath seemed cross, but drove on. And when we came to the roundabout, so that's the Chiswick roundabout, Heath said, this is Great West Road. Ricky said, Ricky and I were sitting in the back seat of a saloon car, and as we got into the Great West Road, Ricky told Heath to drive slowly, and when we had travelled about 300 yards before reaching a bridge, Ricky said to Heath, "We'll get out here," and Heath stopped. Just as we were passing the roundabout, I heard a click and saw that Ricky had his automatic, that's his pistol, in his right hand. I realised that Ricky was going to frighten the driver with his gun and to take his money because we had passed my house on the way. So, I think we need a break. I'm going to stop it here. Immediately after this, I'm going to upload part two. So you can listen to part two. 20-minute chunks, I think that's enough, isn't it? Otherwise, because my throat is about to die and I think I need a cup of tea. So come back for the part two and we'll finish the second part of Elizabeth's statements. Thank you for supporting the show, folks. Stay safe. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.